Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the New Year's massacre in Turkey, which the Islamic State has taken credit for, and assess the exploding blowback to President Erdogan's misrule across a broad front of issues, not just his earlier support for Islamic State fighters and their entry into Syria, but his resumption of a war against the Kurds, his wholesale purging of teachers, lawyers and judges, etc., and more recently, his uncritical embrace of Russia, which calls into question Turkey's membership in NATO. David Phillips, the director of the Peacebuilding and Rights Program at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University and author of The Kurdish Spring, A New Map for the Middle East, joins us to discuss what it will take for the people of Turkey to wake up to what a dangerous and destructive autocrat they have in Erdogan. As he dismantles democracy, ruins the economy, and divides the country between its secular traditions and a resurgent Islamic fundamentalism of the ruling AKP party, the irony becomes clear that Erdogan and the AKP are increasingly similar in outlook and ideology to the Islamic State terrorists who are just beginning to strike at their former patron. Then, with the editor of the Wall Street Journal saying that in their coverage of the new Trump administration, they will not call Trump's lies lies, we will explore what the role of the press is likely to be in covering Trump, since so far he has written his own rules, which the press has dutifully followed, as well as not demanding his tax returns, not getting him to do press conferences, and all the while giving Trump $5 billion worth of free media. John Nichols, The Nation magazine's Washington correspondent and author of People Get Ready, The Fight Against a Jobless Economy and a Citizenless Democracy, joins us to discuss what can be done to expose the real Donald Trump and whether he is in any way up to the job of president when the press has so far been unable to lay a glove on him, while our political opposition appears unwilling to question Trump's legitimacy, let alone his competence to be president. And joining us now is David Phillips, the director of the Peacebuilding and Rights Program at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University. He is the author of The Kurdish Spring, A New Map for the Middle East. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Phillips.
Good to be on the show. Thank you.
So, David, there seems to be a sort of rather bitter irony in terms of this massacre in Istanbul at the nightclub, in as much as Turkey's President Erdogan has condemned the shooting by saying, I offer my condolences to our citizens, to our foreign guests, and to our security officers' families. Normally, he talks about martyrs. And I suspect the reason he's not calling these people martyrs is that his same AKP party that Erdogan is the head of has been, through its Department of Religious Affairs, Directorate of Religious Affairs, have been blanketing the airwaves, warning the devout followers of the AKP against celebrating Christmases and New Year's with Christmas trees and images of Santa Claus, etc. So it seems as though there's a kind of ironic symmetry here with the Islamic State, who we know are fanatical in terms of their fundamentalism, and the AKP being on the same page.
There's an irony because the Justice and Development Party, the AKP, it functions like a branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. Erdogan's propagated Islamism in Turkey because he's turned on the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria and joined Russia and didn't lift a finger or say a word when there was a slaughter going on in Aleppo. Now he's being targeted by ISIS fighters. These are the same fighters that Turkey helped to finance and provided weapons to in 2013 and 2014. Now the problem has come home to roost.
So at what point do you think the Turkish people are going to see what a wrecking crew that this one-man wrecking crew is, Erdogan? He's reignited a war with the Kurds to increase executive power. He's totally bungled the war next door in Syria, and now he's done an about-face. As you point out, he allowed for the Underground Railroad of all these jihadis to go into Syria, and now there's the blowback of them coming back to haunt him, and he's making a deal with Russia and distancing himself from America. it just seems like everything he's touched has turned to disaster.
Well, there certainly is a security crisis in Turkey. There's also a growing economic crisis. So far, Erdogan has been able to keep that at bay by sustaining the economic bubble that's financed construction and new companies. But when the economic bubble bursts and Turkey finds itself at war with all of its neighbors and its domestic economy in collapse, then Turks are going to start shaking their heads and asking a very serious question, whether or not the country is in good hands with the AKP, whether Erdogan is competent to lead them.
And do you detect in his most recent statements, and particularly sidling up to Putin, that both he and Putin seem to share a kind of not even disguised contempt for President Obama? I mean, you get the feeling that this is a marriage of... Go ahead.
That's been building, Ian, for some weeks. It started with the killing of the Russian ambassador in Ankara. Moscow and Ankara coordinated their response. They also worked together to arrange a ceasefire and the withdrawal of civilians from Aleppo. And then on the 20th of December, there was a conference in Moscow that announced a peace plan, a roadmap for Syria. The conveners of the conference were the foreign ministers of Russia, Turkey, and Iran. The U.S. wasn't even informed. The U.N. was excluded. So Erdogan is choosing his bedfellows. And it's an unsavory bunch. It's not in Turkey's interest to be turning its back on the West, on the U.S., or Europe. You know, Russia is a friend of expediency. And Iran certainly doesn't have Turkey's interest in mind. So, you know, Erdogan should look at this recent killing on New Year's as a major wake-up call. And Turkey needs to get back in the tent with its Western allies and start behaving like a reliable member of NATO. Still possible for Turkey to redeem itself and to keep the Islamic State and other extremists at bay. But the trends in Turkey are all negative, and nothing good is going to happen if Erdogan continues on the current course.
And again, I'm speaking with David Phillips, who is the director of the Peace Building and Rights Program at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University and the author of The Kurdish Spring, A New Map for the Middle East. But it seems like this is sort of ego-driven, so much of what he does. He built this massive $110 million palace for himself, Erdogan, and that he's operating on personal ego. He's got this jihad against Gulen and the Gulen movement, which seems to be personal. So I'm wondering if there's anything that you can do here in terms of leverage against somebody. I mean, we may have a president in this country, Donald Trump, who's also a loose cannon in terms of being driven by extreme narcissism. And I'm not sure. I mean, for example, can you threaten to kick him out of NATO? I mean, do we need Turkey in NATO more than Turkey needs to be in NATO? Because I would think that that's their only security umbrella. Do they really want to get into bed totally with Putin?
There is no process for evicting a NATO member. There's a rather extensive set of criteria for getting into the alliance. But once you're in, no country has ever gone rogue, and NATO's never taken steps to evict a member. And what Turkey needs to do is to get out of Syria. Syria will be Erdogan's Waterloo. The invasion and occupation of Jarablus, the military offensive targeting al-Bab, the continued conflict with Syrian Kurds, this will write the death knell for Tayyip Erdogan. And if he chooses to closely ally himself with Russia, and there is an incident in Ukraine or the Baltics or Poland, and Turkey has to be counted as a member of the alliance, right now Turkey is an uncertain ally. We're not sure what Erdogan would do. There are serious questions about NATO's viability if Turkey hitches its wagon to Russia, and turns against members of the alliance.
But what's happening in terms of the country itself? If you purge all of your intelligentsia, all of your teachers, all of your judges, all of your university professors, and by the way, these people are not just losing their jobs, they're losing their housing, they're losing their pensions. He's impoverishing a vast number of his fellow citizens. And at the same time, you know, his support seems to be amongst the sort of rural, less educated poor. At what point, and of course this military coup, this botched military coup set everything back enormously in terms of secularism and, you know, a livable society in the European context. So what's going to happen here? Do you think that we will have basically this sort of broken-spirited underground seething without any power in an authoritarian state?
Right now, 140,000 people have either been arrested or fired from their jobs. They're accused of being tied to the Gulen movement and having taken a role in the coup of July 15. Their assets are being confiscated. Judges are being dismissed. There are more journalists in jail in Turkey today than any other country. So there are serious questions about, you know, Turkey's ties to the West. The European Parliament voted to suspend negotiations over Turkey's candidacy. I'm sure the North Atlantic Alliance is meeting and discussing what to do, you know, given the criminality and corruption of the Erdogan government. Turkey is a deeply divided society. It has a deep history of secularism. All of those secularists, all of the oppositionists who stand against Erdogan are being targeted by the police. There's no recourse, no rule of law. There's no transparency because of the lack of independent media. So you have a Orwellian society which is being manipulated by a dictator, and a government in Washington, the Obama administration, which has very weakly opposed Erdogan, and an incoming administration with President-elect Donald Trump, whose attitude towards Erdogan is going to be unpredictable. So as we speak today, it's not really known what's going to happen in the near term. What we do know is that Turkey is going to remain under siege by Islamists, that the Kurds in Turkey are chafing under the yoke of military rule. So Turkey finds itself at war with its neighbors and at war within. This is exactly contrary to Ataturk's mantra of peace at home and peace abroad.
But when do the Turkish people, the majority of them, notice this? I mean, they must know about their neighbors whose lives have been destroyed by this man in a witch hunt that bears no resemblance to reason. And my understanding about the Gulen movement is, at least in terms of its theology, it seems to have been a very hopeful reformist kind of form of Islam, the opposite of Saudi Wahhabism, that Gulen exhorted his followers, his wealthy followers, not to spend money on mosques, but to spend money on schools. So in every sense, it seems like Erdogan is destroying all vestiges of spiritual and societal and cultural progress.
So there's a bigger debate that we can have someday, Ian, about the Gulen movement and whether or not they have been a positive force in Turkey. Right now, anyone who's considered an oppositionist, a member of Hizmet, the Gulen movement, member of the People's Republican Party, if you're a Kurdish politician, you're likely in jail or you've been dismissed from your job. So this is no way to run a country. There's no way Turkey can remain stable if Erdogan is going to behave in this kind of paranoid fashion and start targeting everyone who he perceives as an opponent. And if Turkey starts to unravel, if the Kurds start to demand independence, and the Islamic State intensifies its attacks across the country, as they did on New Year's at the Reina nightclub, which I visited before, then Turks are going to really start shaking their heads and asking, what kind of leadership do we have and what do we do about it? Can we wait for elections, which are years away, or do we have to do something more drastic? Right now, the hope should be that Erdogan will see the light of day and will change course. If he doesn't do that, then Turks are likely to take matters into their own hands.
Well, it doesn't seem like you were saying earlier, David Phillips, that the Obama administration has had a weak response to Erdogan's growing autocracy. What about the Trump administration? I mean, Trump seems to like these kind of Putin-esque characters like Netanyahu and Erdogan and Vladimir Putin. He even sided with Vladimir Putin against the American president's retaliation against Russian hacking and interference in our elections. He even praised Putin. It's an extraordinary...
And the irony here, Ian, is that Trump and Erdogan are very similar types of personalities. Does that mean they're going to get along, that they're going to be able to cooperate, that the U.S. will accede to Erdogan's demands, including military attacks against U.S. allies in Syria, the Syrian Kurds, or are they likely to conflict? I think that initially there may be a short honeymoon, but we're going to see that Trump and Erdogan are going to be butting heads. They'll find lots of areas to dispute. And Erdogan needs to know that he won't be able to count on the United States to cover him. The bromide that Turkey is an essential NATO ally is getting stale. Nobody wants to hear it anymore. It's clear that a lot of the problem that exists today with ISIS is Turkey's own doing. Turkey has become Islamist, anti-democratic, against human rights and against the United States. So what do we do with a NATO member that's gone rogue? It's time to start talking truth to power, be honest and open, and tell Erdogan exactly what we expect him to do in order to get back in our good graces. That's what we expect from friends and allies, and that's what they should expect from us.
But do you expect that from the National Security Advisor, incoming National Security Advisor, General Michael Flynn, who's been on Earth?
No, I don't expect it. You know, he's been taking money from Turkey. You know, they've set up front companies in the Netherlands that have been paying him hundreds of thousands of dollars. He published an article on Election Day that was taken right out of Erdogan's playbook, almost word for word. So I don't have high hopes that the Trump administration is going to stand in opposition to dictatorship in Turkey. It's time for the Turkish people to stand and be counted. Also, the American people who are following these issues need to raise their voice and express concern. You know, our national security is at risk when we're associated with dictators who are actively undermining our interests.
So just in closing then, David Phillips, do you see, obviously, with this incoming administration, with still this smoking gun vis-a-vis Putin's involvement in the elections, apparently Donald Trump on Tuesday is going to make some statement about it, or he says he's got inside information. But at this point, you've got the consensus of the intelligence community, you've got the president and even a lot of senior Republicans basically saying something happened here and Trump seems to be out of step, and you've got a national security advisor who's compromised by his relations with Erdogan in general. Do you expect any kind of basic, I mean, I guess it comes down to just reality. You've got to have reality-based national security, surely. You can't have people who just make stuff up and believe stuff that is not connected to
it. So I'm not expecting a lot from Donald Trump.
Right.
There's a tradition of democracies working together. There's real question now about the integrity of democracy in the United States and in Turkey. There's also a question about NATO's viability going forward. So I share your deep concern about the near term.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, David Phillips.
Ian, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with David Phillips, who's the director of Peace Building and Rights Program at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University. He's the author of Losing Iraq Inside the Post-War Reconstruction Fiasco, and is a former senior advisor and foreign affairs expert to the United States Department of State during the administrations of Presidents Clinton, Bush, and Obama. And his latest book is The Kurdish Spring, A New Map for the Middle East.